Beis. Today's daf is daf hey. The Gemara is after yesterday's discussions, which really were not about Sanhedrin, a little bit about Sanhedrin, but mostly a general question. Do we follow the way words are read, or do we follow the way words are spelled for interpretations of laws? That has a lot of ramifications. It might have a ramification in regards to how many judges we need for a monetary issue. It might have a ramification for how many walls do we need to a sukkah. Can we create impurity if the blood comes from two dead bodies? When you have a karban chatas, a sin offering, how many times do you need to sprinkle the blood on the altar to get atonement? All of how many days is a woman impure when she gives birth to a girl? All of these issues might be impacted by the question of whether we look at how something is read or how something is spelled. And ultimately, the Gemara says that there's a dispute about this question. The Gemara ultimately says this dispute exists even when the way it's read is not necessarily different from the way it's spelled. In other words, it's spelled a certain way, but there are actually two ways to correctly and normally read that spelling. And yet, in regards to milk and meat, we all know that we don't interpret it, don't cook milk in the fat of mother. We interpret it as don't cook meat in the milk of mother. Because there, the way Rashi explained it, in addition to the fact that we have a tradition to read the letters Ches Lamed Beis as Chalev, as mother, not Chalev, not fat, but also we have the word Tivashel, don't cook. Now, cooking implies meat in a liquid like water or milk, whereas fat is really frying, not so much cooking. So since the Torah didn't say Lo titagein, don't fry, it can't possibly be referring to the fats, it's referring to the cooking, and that's how there, even if you'd normally say, oh, maybe we should look at the way it's spelled, there no one would say, let's look at the way it's spelled, and that the spelling should lead you to fat and not milk, because since you also have the word bishul, derech bishul, asra Torah, the Torah is prohibiting something through cooking, that can't mean milk, meat with fat. That was yesterday's discussion, but now today we're going to go back to the issues of how many judges we need for questions of monetary law. If we go back to that discussion, so we'll remember that the first discussion of the Gemara distinguishes between types of monetary law, between a question of loans versus a question of theft. Questions of theft need three judges who are expert. Questions of loans need three judges who are not expert, and even that, the question of three judges who are not expert, there are really two ways of understanding it. Either that biblically you could have a single judge, but then we're worried if you can have a single judge biblically, you might end up with a street loiterer, so therefore they rabbinically enacted having three judges, so you'll probably end up having someone who'll know something, or that biblically, even in loans, you're supposed to have three expert judges. But to help lenders, and we don't want the doors to lock in front of the borrowers, they said you could end up having three judges who are non-experts. Okay, that's what we had learned till now. So today we're going to go back to this issue of how many judges do we need for a matter of a loan. And we're going to learn today a new issue, and that is the question of a judge who makes the wrong ruling. Let's say you have a judge, three judges, and they're not experts, so they don't really know everything, and they actually make the wrong ruling, and they take the money away from Reuven. They say, Reuven, you're guilty, you have to pay Shimon. And really, Reuven wasn't. And then they realize that they made the wrong ruling after it's too late, after it was already carried out. So there is, under certain circumstances, financial liability. And we'll see under certain other circumstances, there is no financial liability to the judges. Okay, let's start at the very bottom. Dalim Abiz, Tanu Rabbanan. Our sages taught us in a Braisa, Dine Mamanos Bishlosha. The Braisa says, monetary issues are to be judged by three, but V'im haya mumcha l'rabim, if you have a single individual who's been an expert accepted by the community. Ah, Baruch Sasunis is calling. Whose phone is this here? So let's call. One second, we need it for. One second, I can call Baruch.
Here, I can. Hey, Baruch. Oh, I'm the time. Hold on one second.
Yeah, we're all here. I'll call you, Baruch. One second.
We're waiting for you guys to start.
Rabbi, we miss you here, Rabbi.
Okay, we're calling. We're calling. We're calling. We're calling.
Right. Pick up the rabbi.
Alright, call. Answer.
Hello.
Oh, good morning. Good morning.
Rabbi, good morning.
Good morning. Okay, let's start again. The bottom of Dalet Amud Beis at the very last line. Tana Rabbanan, our sages taught us in a Braita. Dine Mamanos Bishlosha. The Braita says that matters of loans and whether or not somebody admitted to a loan, monetary issues should be judged by three judges. But im hayamum chelarabim, if there is an individual, one person known as an expert who's been accepted by the community many times before, dan afilu yechidi, he could even judge by himself. So in other words, this brisa is like the view that we saw a couple days ago, that on questions of loans, even biblically, you don't need three judges, because Elohim, Elohim, Elohim is not a reference to of loans. It wasn't written about loans. He doesn't hold of Eruv Parshios Kasav Kan, and therefore, biblically, all you need is one judge, as it says, B'tzedek Tishpon HaMisecha. And so maybe rabbinically, they said you should have three judges just so that you don't have a street loiterer. But if you have one person who's an expert, you don't need to have three judges, then you can stick with the biblical standard of a single judge. That's what Rashi says, Dan afilu biyachid, even he can judge even by himself. Dichsev, as the Pasuk says, Bitzedek Tishpot. It doesn't say Bitzedek Tishpitu. It says Bitzedek Tishpot. Again, there's a difference between plural and singular forms of verbs. The plural form would be tishpitu. The singular form is tishpot. It says bitzedek, which justice tishpot. You shall judge. So in kan iruv parshios, he doesn't hold that, you know, that the three times it says Elohim in regards to deposits, apply to loans, and therefore even a single judge.
Rabbi, can we just
mumcha is not smicha? That's right. He's just an expert, but he's not does not have smicha. Yeah. Question is he?
Rabbi, no. Why the Gemara has to? I know that Elohim is midat hadin, but why they have to use the name Elohim and not to call him a dayan? Because we're not talking about
The Torah uses the word Elohim to imply that it's an expert judge who has God's presence with him.
Shoftim or shotrim, they say shofetim.
That's later, but in Parshas Mishpatim, the Torah says Ado Elohim yavod var shnehem.
Okay.
So now, the second line on Daf Hey Amud Aleph. All right, what's the definition of an expert who can judge by himself, according to the Braisa? So, we're not going to see a bunch of Amoraim who say, me. I'm Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said, I'm an expert. Somebody like me. I could judge monetary issues of loans and admitting to a loan by myself. The person who put together the Tosefos, the nephew of Rebbe, Rebbe Chiya said also, someone like myself, I could judge monetary discussions of whether or not there was a loan just by myself. I fit. So they weren't so sure about this in the yeshiva. They were questioning. When Rabbi Nachman and Rabbi Chiya said that they could be the single judges, could go on not, does it mean like me, the Gemirna, because I've learned the traditions, I've learned the Mishnayot, I know the laws, plus the Savirna, and I have good analytical skills, I know how to raise questions, add further insights, interpret new things, Plus, point number three, Nakitna Rishusa, I have permission from the Reish Galuta. We're going to see in today's daf that, according to, again, we're going to explain it the way Rashi explains it. There was a leader of the Jews in Bavel, in Iraq. Remember, Bavel in the times of the Gemara was occupied by the Persians. It was all part of the big Persian Empire. So there was a leader of the Jews. The fancy English word for it is exilarch. He was a governor in charge of all the Jews, appointed by the Persian king. He was always a descendant of Jehoiachin, king of Yehuda, part of the line, the Davidic line. He was a descendant of the Judean kings who had been exiled into Iraq. And he was the leader of the Jews, and he had full government authority. He could impose taxes, he could jail people. He was a very powerful person, the governor of the Jews, the Reish Galuta. So the Reish Galuta would give people permission to go out and be judges. He himself had a lot of power because the government had appointed him and gave him authority over the Jews. So, is Rabbi Nachman saying, and Rabbi Chiya saying, the reason why we can judge, because one, we know the laws, two, we know how to interpret, and three, we have permission from the Reish Galuta. Avalo Nakit Rishusa, but if you have someone who knows a lot and knows how to interpret, but he doesn't have permission from the exilarch, so then Dine Lo Dina, then his judgments are not judgments. Odilmar, maybe Afakab Delo Nakit Rishusa, even without permission from the exilarch, Dine Dina, your judgments are judgments if you know the law and you know how to interpret and you're a big expert. So Tashma, that question we can resolve from the following proof. Come and hear. Mar Zutra Bereid Rav Nachman. Mar Zutra, the son of Rav Nachman, Dan Dina. He once judged a judgment by himself. Vita, and he made the wrong ruling. He made the innocent person pay. So Asa L'Kamad Rav Yosef. So he went to Rav Yosef, you know, the innocent person went to Rav Yosef saying, hey, I want Mar Zutra to pay me back. Amaleis, Rav Yosef said to Mar Zutra, Im kiblu chalayu, if the litigants had accepted you on themselves, they said, you'll be our judge, and we accept whatever you rule, whether you make the right decision or the wrong decision, we're not going to sue you, we forgive it. So then, lo tishan, then you don't need to pay. Vilo, but if they didn't say explicitly that they're accepting you even when you make the wrong decision, rather they wanted you to judge them, but they said they wanted you to judge them with Torah law. Here you made the wrong decision, so it's not Torah law. So then, zilshlim, you need to go pay them. So Shmamina, so this is a proof, kilo nakit rishusa dine dina, that you can judge, an expert can judge, even without permission from the exilarch. As if the exilarch gave Mar Zutra, the son of Rav Nachman, permission to judge, then Mar Zutra could never have been held liable. Because even if he made the wrong decision, he has permission from the exilarch to judge. So the fact that we're saying, no, it depends on whether or not the people explicitly said that they're going to waive their rights to a complaint if you make a mistake. So that shows us that he must be someone who doesn't have permission from the exilarch. He's just judging because they accepted him, or you know, he's an expert. So you see that an expert without permission can also judge. So we actually come up here with two tracks. If you are a single expert and the exilarch gave you permission to judge, then even if you make the wrong decision, you're not going to pay because the exilarch gave you permission to judge. And if you don't have permission from the exilarch to judge, so then you can still judge if you're an expert, but you may have to pay if you make the wrong decision because you were asked to judge Torah law. If you make the wrong decision, it's not Torah law. But if they explicitly say, even if you make the wrong choice and the wrong Torah decision, we're not going to sue, we don't mind, so then you'd be exempt from paying if they had explicitly accepted you on themselves. Shvamina, so that's a proof that you don't need permission from the exilarch to judge. You could have judgment without permission of the exilarch, but then there's a likelihood of actually ending up having to pay for making the wrong decision. So I'm a Rav, so now Rav gave advice. Hi, man, the boy, the maid, and Dina. If you want to judge judgments, the tami boy, the miftere, and if you ever make mistakes, you want to be sure that you won't have to pay. So lishko rishus mi begalusa. So make sure that you have permission of the exilarch to be the judge. V'chena mar Shmuel. So Shmuel also gave that advice. Lishko rishus mi begalusa mi beresh galusa. Go make sure to take permission from the Exilarch and then go out and be involved in judgments, because then, no matter what, you won't have to pay if you make a mistake. Yes, Simeon, a question.
Well, why is the judge liable for why doesn't he get the money back from?
Maybe he can't. They've already gone. Those people are already, that guy might be out of town. And he's liable for the payments, apparently. It's not, the normal damages. Normal damages, maybe you'd argue this is grama, this is an indirect cause. As we saw earlier, this may be an enactment to encourage experts to be involved and non-experts to scare them away. Because, hey, you may have to end up paying.
But the mikra is not allowed in him. If the Torah is not allowed in me to do biyachid, how can...
This brisa holds that an individual can judge, at least according to the way Rashi explains this Gemara, because of the pasuk, Bitzedek tishpot amitecha. It doesn't say Bitzedek tishpitu.
Oh, exactly.
Tishpot.
Also specifically loans.
Yeah, we're talking about loans. Okay. So now we're going to talk a little bit about the idea of the Exilarch giving permission for someone to judge. Remember that in Iraq/Persia, the leader of the Jews was the Exilarch. In the land of Israel, even in the times of the Gemara, the leader of the Jews was the Nasi, the head of the Sanhedrin. Now, they were very different levels of power. In Iraq, the Jews had significant autonomy. The Persians were very, very nice to the Jews. That's why Talmud Bavli is a much better work than the Talmud Yerushalmi, than the Jerusalem Talmud. So in Iraq, the Exilarch had real authority, he had real power, whereas in the land of Israel, the Nasi, they were not under the Persians in Israel. In Israel, the Jews were under the Romans, who became the Christians. There was a lot of persecution. So in the land of Israel, the Nasi had much less power. So that's the way Rashi explains this Gemara. So the Gemara now says like this, Pshita, it's obvious to us. If the Exilarch gives permission to someone to judge, so he can judge throughout Bavel, throughout Iraq. And even further, if the Nasi gave permission to a rabbi to judge in Israel, so he could judge anywhere in Israel. That would work, Mahani. Now also, if the Exilarch here gave permission to a rabbi to judge in Israel, Mahani, that would also work. He now has permission to judge. Why? Because the power of the Exilarch is stronger than the power of the Nasi. Tahacha Shevet, over here in Bavel, the leader, the Exilarch, is like a staff. He has tremendous power. He can seize money. He has a lot of power. Vahasam, but over there in the land of Israel, the Nasi, the leader, has much less power. He'd only be called a mechokek, a lawgiver, a legislator, but he wouldn't be called an executive. He doesn't have the same degree of power. Kintatanya, as we learned in a brisa, Yaakov Avinu gives a bracha to Yehuda. He tells Yehuda, lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda. The staff shall never leave Yehuda. V'umechokek mi bein raglav. And the lawgiver won't leave amongst his feet. So that teaches you the staff. Elu rashe galiel shebabavel. This is a reference to the Exilarchs who are in Iraq, in Bavel. They are to be appointed. Yaakov was predicting that they will be appointed from the Davidic dynasty, and they will have great power. They'll be called Shevet, a staff. Shirodin es Yisrael b'Shevet. They will rule over the Jews and guide the Jews with a staff. Mechokek b'nei raglav, and a lawgiver from between the feet. Elu b'nei banav vav shel Hillel. These are the grandchildren of Hillel. Shemalamdin Torah Barabim. They are still teaching Torah publicly as the Nasi'im, as the leaders of the Sanhedrin, but they have less power. So since they were given less power, therefore, Mehasam Lahacha, let's say a Nasi over there in Israel, gives permission to a rabbi to judge. Can that rabbi, using that permission, now judge in Bavel and be exempt from making mistakes? No. Then not. So that's what the Gemara is going to now say. Mehasam lahacha mai. What happens if there was permission given over there in Israel? Can a rabbi who has permission from there come here and judge and be exempted from paying with mistakes? The Gemara is going to say not so. So is it? What's the law? So Tashma coming here. The following story. Rabba bar Chuna. Rabba the son of Chuna. We'll see that Chuna was a man. Dan Dina. So he actually issued a ruling. on a monetary issue. V'tzah, you made a mistake. As l'kam ed Rebchia. They went to Rebchia to see if he had to pay. So Amalei, Rebchia said to me, kiblu chalayhu, if the litigants had explicitly accepted you upon themselves, then even if you would make a mistake, they're not going to sue you. Lo tisham, you don't need to pay. V'lo, but if you don't have an explicit permission, zil shlim, you need to pay. So Gemara says, 1 second, Rabbi Bar Chuna, Rishu Savanakit, Rabbi Bar Chuna, we know had permission from the rabbis of Israel, from the Nasi. So Shmamina, this is a proof that Mehasam Lahacha, if you have permission from there to bring it over here, Lo Mahani, it doesn't work. Shmamina, that's a good proof. So Gemara says, really, Velo Mahani, is that really so, that permission from the Reish Galusa can grant the judge rights to judge in Israel, but permission from a Nasi can't grant the judge rights to judge in Bavel if he's not accepted explicitly even when he makes mistakes? Velo Mahani, does it not give you permission? Does it not give you the rights to judge? What about the following Rabbi Bar Avuna? Ki Avim Mintzavad Debei Reish Galusa. Rabbi Bar Avuna was once fighting with the people of the Reish Galusa, the people of the Reish Galusa's house. There was some dispute. Amar said, he said to them, "Lav minaychu nekitna reshusa. I didn't get my permission to judge from you. Nekitna reshusa me'Abba Mari. I got my permission to judge from my father, from Rav Huna. Abba Mari me Rav. Rav Huna got it from Rav. Rav got it from Reb Chiya, and Reb Chiya got it from Rebbe. And Rebbe is the Nasi in the land of Israel." So Amar says it was an argument, but it wasn't a winning argument. The Milsa Da'alma Hudokimla. That's just what Rabbi Bar Avuna said to the people of the Reish Galusa. But it really is not a winning argument. It was just, he thought it would be a winning argument, but it's not. The fact that you're in Bavel and you have permission from Israel doesn't give you the rights to issue rulings and make mistakes in the rulings and not be held liable. So now the Gemara asks, Lo Mahani. So if getting permission from the Nasi of Israel doesn't give you the right to judge and inoculate you from liability, so Rabbi Bar Chuna reshusa denakat lamule. So why would Rabbi Bar Chuna even ask for permission from the Nasi of Israel? He knew he was coming to Bavel, so what was it going to help him to have permission from the Nasi of Israel? It would help him liayora sayom lemalagvun. It would help him for those cities that are on the boundary near Israel, because those cities follow Israel, and those cities having permission from the Nasi of Israel is as much as having permission to areas of Israel. My Rishusa, how do you know that Rabbi Bar Chana got permission from the Nasi of Israel? So it's the following story. Ki Ava Nachas Rabbi Bar Chana leBavel, and Rabbi Bar Chana went down from Israel to Bavel. Amalei Reb Chiya leRabbi, Rabbi Chiya told Rabbi, the collector and author of the Mishnayos, Ben Achi, the son of my brother, Yored leBavel, is going down to Bavel. So I need to get permission for him. Rabbi, Yored, does he have permission to issue rulings on matters of kashrus? So Rabbi said, Yored, yeah, he can do that. Yadin, does he have permission to issue rulings of judgment on loans? Yadin, yeah, he has. Yatir Bechoros, does he have permission to examine firstborn animals and to say, yeah, this firstborn animal has a permanent blemish? So since it has a permanent blemish, we can slaughter it. Because if it doesn't have a permanent blemish, you can't slaughter it till it gets a permanent blemish. Yatir, he can permit firstborn animals. Yavanachas Rav leBavel. Then when Rav wanted to go down from Israel to Bavel, Amalei Reb Chiya leRabbi. Again, Reb Chiya went to Rabbi and he said, Ben Achoti, this time he said, the son of my sister, Yored leBavel, is going down to Bavel. Yored, does he have permission to issue rulings on kashrus? Yored, yes, yes. Yadin, does he have permission to issue rulings on judgments? You know, monetary, you know, issue, to resolve monetary law issues. Yadin, he has permission. Yatir Bechoros, does he have permission to permit a firstborn animals and to determine that it's a permanent blemish? No, Al Yatir. Rav can't do that. So now the Gemara asks, Maishna, what's the difference, Lemar? What's the difference that for one, for Rabbi Bar Chana, Kakari ben Achi, he called him the son of my brother. Maishna Lemar, why for Rav, Kakari ben Achosi, he called him son of my sister. If you're going to say that's just the reality, that Rabbi Bar Chana was the son of the brother of Reb Chiya, whereas Rav was only the son of the sister of Reb Chiya, but we know that Avod the father of Rav, and Chuna, the father of Rabba Bar Chuna, Shila, Marta, and Reb Chia, Kulu Bnei Abba. They were all the children of Abba Bar Acha, Karsala, from the place called Kafri Havu. So you see that they're all, you know, Rav is also, because Rav is the son of Abo, so Rav is also the son of the brother of Reb Chia. So the Gemara says it's true. Rav Bar Achua. Rav was the son of the brother of Reb Chia, but he was also the son of the sister of Reb Chia. Because Reb Chia's father had remarried, and he married a woman who had had a son from an earlier marriage. So that daughter from an earlier marriage had married the father of Rav. So Rav, from his father's side, was the son of the brother. But then, since Reb Chia was born from this second marriage, so Reb Chia was also the brother to the sister of... So Rav was both the son of the brother of Reb Chia and the son of the sister of Reb Chia. Because through Rav's mother and Reb Chia shared the same... had the same mother, whereas Rav's father and Reb Chia shared the same father, but not the same mother. So Rav himself was actually the son of Reb Chia's brother and the son of Reb Chia's sister, whereas Rabba Bar Chuna Bar Achua, he was the son of the brother of Reb Chia, Delav Bar Achta. He wasn't the son of the sister of Reb Chia. The Ibayasema, alternatively, I'll give you another reason why Rav was called Bar Achoti, Ben Achoti, the son of my sister, Al Shem Chachmaso, because Rav was actually more knowledgeable than Rabba Bar Chana, and because he was so knowledgeable, he was called Ben Achoti, because it says in Mishlei, Emor La Chachma Achosi At, refer to wisdom as being my sister. So someone who's very wise, there's a lot of wisdom, is called Achoti. Yeah, question, Lloyd. Yeah.
So my first thought was, okay, so if he's not, maybe it's more of a religious thing, a religious knowledge, that they didn't allow to blame this. But then I realized if you're allowing to make rulings on kashrut,
yeah,
then why...
Great. The Gemara is going to ask that question. The Gemara is going to discuss that. Exactly. So now the Gemara talks about Lloyd's very concern, right? So Rabbi Bar Chuna was going to Bavel. So his uncle Reb Chia got smicha for him. That's basically the story. He goes to Rebbe. He says, my nephew's going to Bavel. Can he issue rulings of monetary law? Can he issue rulings on kashrut? Can he issue rulings on a bechor, on a firstborn? So Rebbe said, fine, yeah, everything yes. But then when Rav goes down to Bavel, monetary law, yes, kashrut, yes, firstborn blemishes, no. So the Gemara says, one second, al yatir bechoros, right? Yatir bechoros. The question had been asked to Rebbe, can Rav issue rulings that a firstborn is permitted? No, al yatir. He can't determine that the blemish is permanent. So my timer, what's the reason? Ilein mishum de lo chachim, right? This is Lloyd's question. If you're going to say, because Rav's not so knowledgeable, hakaminu de chachim tuvi, you just say he's more knowledgeable than Rabba Bar Chana. He's called son of sister because sister is wisdom, and he's the man who has all the wisdom. So ele mishum de lo bekiya b'mumi, so maybe he's not an expert in blemishes. Maybe he knows Torah, but he doesn't know animal, he doesn't know zoology. Okay. For I'm a Rav, we know that Rav himself told us that Shmona Esar Chadashim Gadalti Yetzal Ro Behema. I spent 18 months growing. I spent 18 months, you know, really imbibing the ways of the shepherds, laid the Ezemum Kavua, Ezemum Over, to know what is a permanent blemish and what's not. He spent 18 months, a year and a half, studying sheep. He really knows. He knows. He was sleeping with the sheep. He knows. Ella, so no, two answers. One answer is, l'chalik lo kavod l'Rabba Bar Chana. Remember, Rabba Bar Chana goes down first. And he asks, you know, through Reb Chiya. Can I issue kashrus rulings? Yes. Monetary rulings? Yes. Permanent blemish rulings? Yes. Now Rav's also going down. So in a second, Rabbi Baruch Hanna is going to now look less prominent. He's not as knowledgeable as Rav. And Rav can do everything that he can do. Therefore, Rebbe said, you know, we're going to leave an area that Rav can't do. Because Rabbi Baruch Hanna went first. We want him to continue with his, you know, kavod that we're building up for him. So Rav, you can issue kashrus rulings and monetary rulings, but you can't issue blemishes rulings. Not that you don't know the blemishes. You do. But, you know, give space to Rabbi Baruch Hanna. That was one explanation, to give kavod to Rabbi Baruch Hanna. By the same explanation, number two, Mishum HaGufei, this very fact that Rav was such an expert in blemishes was a reason not to allow him to issue rulings on blemishes. The Rav Bekir B'mum Mitzvei, because Rav is a very great expert in blemishes, therefore Shari Mumi D'lo Yadi Inchi, he looks at an animal, he says, this is a real blemish. No one else thinks that, because no one else is as big an expert as he is. So therefore, Amriki, I gavna shara Rav. So people are not going to understand him. They're going to say, any blemish, any little scratch. Oh, Rav would permit that. We permit it too. So people are going to learn from Rav to make the wrong decisions. V'asul mushrim mim over. And therefore, they might actually permit an animal to be slaughtered who only has a passing blemish and who doesn't have a permanent blemish. All right, going back to these stories. Again, Rav Barchana and Rav both get permission from Rebbe through Rebbe Chiya to go issue rulings. So the Gemara says, again, let's review what happened. Yore, Rebbe Chiya asks, can he issue a ruling on kashrus? Yore, yeah, he can issue a ruling on kashrus. The Gemara asks, I don't understand. He gamer, if he knows the laws, reshu salamali lamishkal. So what does he need to have permission for? I mean, he knows, he knows. If he knows what the law is, he knows what the law is. It's not even a question of a dispute where there could be a payment. It's kashrus. So why would he need permission? So the Gemara explains that they enacted that you need permission. Mishamaisa shaya because of the following story. The Tani we learned in a brisa. Pam achas halach Rebbe l'makom echad. Once Rebbe went to a place, the Rav bnei Adam, and he saw people doing something terrible. Megablini sotein betuma. They're kneading their doughs in impurity. They have utensils that are impure, and they are kneading the flour and the water, making the dough out of it in an impure utensil. So the food is becoming impure. He said to them, why are you doing this? Why are you kneading your dough and ignoring the laws of purity? They said to him, what do you mean? Everything here is pure. What do you mean it's pure? These utensils are impure. I saw rodents fall in the utensil. You took the rodent out and you put the dough in. They said, no. Talmud Echad Balakan. There was a student who came here, and he taught us, we know that for anything to be able to become tameh, it has to first be rinsed off. That's called mukhshar. It has to be hechsher. It has to become able to become tameh. So it has to be rinsed with one of the seven liquids. The seven liquids are yad shachatam, wine, blood, oil, milk, dew, honey, and water. So these are the seven liquids. So they said, the person came here and he said to us that, you know, swamp water can't make anything impure, can't make it able to become impure. So here the dough is made out of swamp water with flour. Nothing's becoming impure. So they were completely misrepresenting what he said. There's no such thing. No one would say that swamp water can't make something impure. Who the student had said, may beitzim darashlu. He said that water from eggs, in other words, the egg white, an egg white is not a liquid. It's not one of the seven liquids. That can't make something able to become tame. He wasn't saying that water of the swamps wasn't mei bitsaim. Bitsaim are swamps. It was mei beitzim. Beitzim are eggs. It was egg liquid. But they misheard him. The inu savor, they said mei bitsaim kamar. Vitzo. And they made a mistake. And it was another reason why they made a mistake. Vitzo nami baha. They made a mistake from the laws of Para Aduma. The ashes of the Parah Aduma are to be sprinkled with spring water and then sprinkled on someone who's Tameh Meis to make him pure. So we learned in a Mishnah, Mei Karmion, waters of a river, Umei Piga, and waters of Piga, waters of a swamp, Psulin. So they do not mix with the ashes to make someone able to become pure. Mipneshein Mei Betzayim, because they are not living waters of a spring. These are flowing waters. These are swamp waters, collected waters. So they again made an assumption. They said, "Inu savor midul gabi chatas psili." If it's not pure enough to be used with the ashes of Parah Aduma, Achshuri nami lo machshuri. So it also can't make something able to become tummy. Veloin, it's not true. Hasamlin chatas there in regards to the ashes of paraduma being in mayim chaim. It has to be spring water, living waters. Hachachshuri, but here in regards to making something able to become tummy, kaldu machshuri. Even a little bit of water, any type of water, as long as it's one of the seven liquids, can make something able to become tummy. So Tanas we learned in a brisa, Sasha, at that moment, in the days of Rebbe, Gazu, they made a rule. Talmud al yore. No student should issue rulings, elim kenoto rishus merabo, unless he has permission from his teacher. And his teacher is going to make sure that the only people he's going to give permission to are people who speak very clearly. And when they say mei beitzim, everybody hears it as beitzim, and they don't hear it as mei betzaim. So that's why, even in issues of kashrus, you need to have permission from a sage, because they enacted that we don't want people going around teaching who maybe don't teach clearly, because then people will come away with misimpressions. All right, a story. Tanchum, Rebbe Rabbi Ami, Tanchum, the son of Rabbi Ami, Ikla l'chatar. He came to Chatar. Darash l'hu, he taught them a law about Pesach. He said, Mutter l'ilto schitim b'Pesach. You're allowed to take the wheat, soak them in water a little bit, and then quickly grind them. It's not going to become chametz by the little bit of soaking. Amru lo, they said to Reb Tanchum, I don't understand, you're issuing a ruling. Lav Reb Mani, your teacher, Reb Mani, de min Tzur, Reb Mani from Tzur, Ika Acha, isn't he here? V'tanya, we lived in a braisa, Talmud al yora alach v'makom rabo. A student should not issue a ruling when his teacher is around. Elim kena yirachuk men shalosh parsos. Unless his teacher is three parsa away, kineged machni Yisrael, the distance of the Jewish camp. The same way when Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, you couldn't have people issuing rulings unless they were away from Moshe Rabbeinu. But in Moshe Rabbeinu's presence, it wouldn't be right. So Amar Luhu, he said to them, Lava Datoy, I didn't know that my teacher was around. Another story where a teacher is around, but you could issue a ruling because it's to keep people away from sin. Reb Chiya Chazilahu Gavad Avakoy B'Veis HaKvar. So Reb Chiya was around his teacher Rebbe, but yet he saw a person who was standing at a cemetery. Amarle, he said to him, Lav Benish Ploni Kohen Ata, aren't you a Kohen? Amarle, he said to him, listen, in Avu Adahu Gavad, my father, Gvai Naim Havel, he had very, arrogant eyes. Nasan Eid of Begusha, he saw a divorced woman, he had a desire for her, Vechilo, and he desecrated the Kehuna. Okay, we'll stop here. Because he married a divorced woman, so the child of a Kohen and a divorced woman is not a Kohen. So he was saying, therefore, I'm not a Kohen, and therefore, I can stand in a cemetery. The reason why the Gemara quotes this here is to teach you that even though a student can't issue a ruling in the presence of his teacher, but to stop someone else from sinning, that he could do. That's why Rebbe Chiya tried to do this, and then he discovered that the person wasn't really sinning. Rebbe Chananya ben Akash Yomei, Retzah Kadosh Baruch Hu Lezakos Es Yisrael, Lefichach Hirbalem Torah Mitzvah, Shneamar Dnei Chpetzel Mantzim Ko, Yagdil Terav Yadir.